Did you know that I used to run a publishing company? Back when I was in college, I took the business plan that I developed for my entrepreneurship class and launched it as a real business in the real world. It was an audiobook publishing company called Brook Audio, and we published public domain audiobooks for the homeschool market. And the plan for that company stood on a few observations that I had made about homeschoolers because I was a homeschooler myself. So I'm like, I have a competitive advantage and keen insight on this emerging market. So here's what I observed. One, homeschoolers like old books, especially the kinds of books that are so old that copyright has expired. Homeschoolers spend a lot of time in their car since they tend to live in rural and suburban areas, interacting with other rural and suburban homeschoolers. They zigzag across the county. The third thing was that homeschoolers did not, in 2009, have the ability to play iPods via Bluetooth or MP3 CDs in their car, but they could play conventional CDs. And number four, that they would prefer to buy real, easily playable CDs to the less expensive, but almost impossible to play MP3 CDs. So I spent months developing an on-demand CD production process that allowed us to rapidly create CDs that we could then sell to homeschoolers at conventions that would allow them to turn their cars into classrooms. So I purchased a booth at a homeschool convention. I had all these CDs ready to sell and learned very quickly that my first three observations were correct. My assumptions were correct. But the fourth observation was not. And this was a total shock. And here's what's crazy. It was true that homeschool moms in 2009 didn't know how to play an MP3 CD, but they still preferred to buy it. As a fluke, I brought some MP3 CDs to the conference just, you know, to see if there was any tech savvy folks there. And the idea of getting 100 audiobooks on one CD for $50 was so appealing that moms who had no idea how to rip or burn an MP3 were still choosing to buy it. And I would be very explicit, like, you know, you can't put this in your car. It won't play. And they're like, yeah, no problem. My kids will figure it out for me. So I realized leaving that conference that all of that work that I'd put into developing the CD production process, all of the presumptions that I'd made for the company, it was not going to work. Because if what people were wanting was MP3s, the best way to deliver an MP3 is not on a CD. It's over this thing called the internet. The company was doomed. All of the thousands of dollars and months of work that I invested into the company was lost. And I had learned an expensive lesson. Test your ideas as soon as possible. Just because you have a unique insight doesn't mean that you have full understanding. I was a homeschool graduate. I grew up in the homeschool world. I had insights that nobody else had, and yet I still failed because I didn't have perfect clarity and I didn't test my idea soon enough. In the book, The Lean Startup, Eric Ries talks about developing something called a minimum viable product, or MVP. And this is a way of testing an idea and testing a market to see if it's a good match, to see if it's worth the investment of time and money. And I know what you're saying. You're like, but it's not expensive to write a book. I can write a book on my computer. I already own it. It's like, that's true. You're not spending a lot of money writing your book, but it is expensive in terms of time, that one thing even more precious than dollars. You can save yourself a lot of wasted time if you test your ideas before you invest into putting them to paper, right? Are your jokes funny? Are your lessons useful? Is your story resonant? But how do you do that? Well, if you write fiction, one option is to release your story a chapter at a time on Substack and see if people are willing to pay to subscribe to get the next bit of your story as it comes out. You could also write about your nonfiction topic on your blog and see if your blog does some good numbers, as the kids say. But my favorite way to test book ideas, both for fiction and nonfiction, is with a podcast. By podcasting your book before you write it, you'll find out if your topic is one that meets the needs of your audience. You'll learn about the deepest pains of your listeners, and you'll be able to adjust your book to provide a painkiller rather than a vitamin for those specific struggles. So how do you test your idea with a podcast? We'll find out in this episode of the Christian Publishing Show, the podcast for writers who would want to advance Christ's kingdom using excellent writing. And we have a guest on the show today. She's a national speaker, a best-selling author, and host of the popular Prayers of Rest podcast, which is in the top 0.5% of all podcasts in the world. Not just Christian podcasts, but all podcasts in the world. She's in rarefied company. Asherita Chuchu, welcome to the Christian Publishing Show.
Thomas, thank you so much for having me. It's my joy to be here.
So tell us your story. How did you get into podcasting?
I had wanted to podcast for years and years and years. In fact, I had outlined three different podcast ideas over the years and had my content calendar and the list of guests I was going to invite. And every time I was ready to like get after it, I just didn't have a sense of peace to pursue it. That I feel the co-laboring with God's Spirit and surrendering and submitting to Him and saying, okay, I'm going to wait. And it came to this season in my life where multiple people told me, you really need to start a podcast. And it became a running joke where I was like, haha, yes, I know, but God won't let me. And actually what happened is early 2020, when the lockdown happened and everyone was stuck at home, I sensed God's Spirit saying, this is the time. This is what you were waiting for. So this topic of Prayers of Rest was one that I had not considered to be one of my stellar podcast ideas, but it was the topic of the next book that I had been contracted to write. And I had this based on some previous sessions from conferences and retreats that I had led women in a time of prayer using this REST acronym. So Moody Publishers, that I've published multiple books with, gave me a book deal, and it was going to be 365 of these prayers using the REST acronym. And in that season where there was so much unrest, that was the perfect time to call people into a space of rest, into a time of intentional prayer. So that is how the Prayers of Rest got started, actually not as a podcast, but as a live Instagram video feed. And Thomas, I love how you set this up as the minimum viable product, because that's what it was. Before investing in a microphone and podcasting equipment and figuring out everything with podcasting, I just wanted to see if people were interested in rest prayers of rest. So I went to my Instagram community and I said, hey, I feel like I need intentional prayer during this lockdown. If you want to join me, I'm going to go live tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. And every weekday, I'll be here and we will pray through scripture using this format. And I was surprised, Thomas, that dozens of people and then hundreds of replays day after day, week after week, for 8 weeks straight, we gathered at 7 a.m. to pray. And that's when I started the podcast.
I bet for no other reason than that you didn't have to do it at 7 a.m. and be on camera.
I was at the point where I was like, this sounded great 8 weeks ago, but I'm tired of waking up when all my peers are staying up to watch shows and sleeping in the morning. But no, it got to a point where I felt like I don't have the stamina to keep up daily prayer calls. And so let's do this once a week. And even then, we adopted a test approach. And I said, I'm going to do this for a season. I'm going to do it for the summer. We'll do it for 12 weeks, once a week. And let's see if we get downloads. Let's see if we get people interested in a podcast format of Prayers of Rest. And again, I was just blown away with the community response, with the way that people were sharing the podcast with their friends, telling them, like, you got to listen to this. And it was a successful first season. But even with that, again, I needed to know, are you with me? Are you in this with me? So even before it became a book, testing the content as a podcast. And at the end of the summer, I had edited everything. I'd produced everything. I figured out like the hosting of the podcast, everything myself. But I knew, okay, now I need to get into the writing of the manuscript. I don't have the time to do all of that work myself. I'm going to have to hire it out. And I brought it to our community of listeners. And I said, if you want this podcast to continue, I'm going to set up a Patreon account. I need X amount of dollars. Let's make this happen. And within 48 hours, we were fully funded. Wow. Which again is just the hand of God. Like when God's hand is on something, He will make it happen. And that was 3 years ago. And we're still going strong. Prayers of Rest. We have 500,000 downloads, I think, all over the world. Just so excited about what God is doing with it.
And you have that interaction now with your readers and your listeners, which I imagine is helping inform the book, right? So what did that look like? How would listeners get in touch with you, and how did that inform? Now you're writing the book while you're getting this feedback at the same time.
Yeah, that was an important component to the writing of it. So part of it was testing content, the structure of the REST acronym, and saying, is this working? Is this something that people are understanding, what we're doing in the R, what we're doing in the E, the S, the T? Is it needed? So getting those early comments on the live videos of how God was using the time of prayer, but then also in podcast format, hearing from listeners, both through email and reviews on Apple Podcasts, people saying, like, God is using this in my life. There's so much self-doubt that follows us into the writing process, that when I'd be in the middle of a session of writing prayers and thinking, like, who am I to do this? Like, people don't need written prayers. Like, there's just that soundtrack, right, that tells you to quit. Having that community, going back to read those reviews, even in our Patreon community, posting and saying, hey, I'm working on who I am in Christ. Like, that is the group of prayers I'm writing this week. What do you pray for me as I'm writing these prayers? And to hear their comments saying, we need that. Here's where I'm struggling. Being able to write specifically to the pain points that they would then identify in those comments. I've written 7 books now, and this is the most collaborative, in that I put content out there, I hear back from my community, and then I'm able to write in response to that. And it's really, really helped, even with the self-doubt component, but then also with the topic ideas. 365 prayers is a lot of individual topics to come up with. So being able to put something on that community forum and saying, out of these topics, which ones would you like prayers for? All of that is possible because of the podcast that first started and gathered that community together.
Surveying your listeners, so beneficial. I recently did a listener survey on my other podcast, Novel Marketing, and it was so enlightening. Every time I do this, I have something that I believed about my audience that ends up not being true. And once that kind of glass gets shattered and I can actually see now clearly, there's a big surge in how much my listeners are enjoying the podcast, because I'm now making it a little bit more for them, how they really are, and not how I think that they are. And it allows me to serve them better as I get a better sense of who they are and what their tastes are and what their preferences are. But you've got these 365 prayers. The prayers that are in the book, were you reading those live on the podcast beforehand?
So actually, the podcast came before the book, and the first probably 8 weeks. So I was doing these live prayers 5 times a week. I would go back after our half hour live prayer call and then type the prayers out based on what had been prayed live. And I found I really prefer it that way because I felt like there was a spontaneity of the spirit of prayer. So being able to write the prayers after I recorded them, but I quickly outpaced that, and now there are 365 prayers. So now what we're doing is going through the book and one collection at a time, building our new seasons around those collections, and then adding extra prayers as we go. So it started one way. Now we are praying through the book, so to speak, and it'll keep us busy probably for the next few years.
So a lot of people are listening, and they're like, but why would someone pay to get that on paper when they already got it on podcast for free?
Well, my publisher said the same thing. So you would not be alone in that assumption. But again, talking to your community and asking them, what are you looking for? And this was what I was able to take back to my publisher, was the first few weeks of live prayer calls, the number one request was, this is great, but can I have it in writing? Like, I want to be able to open up and read and pray along, even when I don't have my phone with me. So they were asking for written prayers, and far like the opposite of they wouldn't buy it. People would be introduced to Prayers of Rest, and they still are. Like, they will hear the podcast first, and then they'll go and buy the book because they love what they're hearing. They want it in a written format. I can't overemphasize how beneficial it has been for me as a writer and a content creator to have a community that is giving me feedback all the time about how I can better serve them. So yeah, they would pay for the book, and actually our patrons pay on a monthly basis to support the podcast, even if everything is offered for free. Because when you build a community around a central belief, that is where the buy-in is. They believe in what you have to offer, and they want to support you with that. They'll support you with their purchasing dollars. They will support you with their shares. They will support you with reviews. They will support you with prayer. I can't tell you how valuable it was for me as I was writing this manuscript during the pandemic to have a community of people saying, this is for you. Would you pray for me? I need help right now. To know that people have your back in that way, that they're praying. And then in the launch of the book later, to have a community already formed that is excited saying, hey, this book was written for us. They have a buy-in. They're already committed to it. They're going to help champion your book.
That's right. The medium is the message. And when somebody says, oh, why would they buy your book if they've already heard it for free on a podcast? That sounds like somebody saying, why would someone go see the movie based off of your book if they've already read the book? They already know how it's going to end, right? I was watching some footage of Oliver Anthony was doing a concert at some outdoor farmer's market, and everybody there is singing the song with Oliver Anthony. It's like, you already heard the song. Why do you need to go to the concert? It's like, because the medium is the message, right? It's different listening to a song in your ear pods as it is going to a concert with 10,000 other people who are also singing the song. It's a different experience to buy the book. And if you really are blessing people with your podcast, if you're serving them with your podcast, they want to reciprocate. They want a way to say thank you. And if you tell them, hey, if you're enjoying this podcast, a way that you can say thank you is by buying my book that you've heard parts of already. I know you're going to like it because you're still listening to the podcast. That's a really easy sell. And savvy publishers will let authors like you continue doing things like this because it works. Successful podcasters lead to successful books, because the kind of people who listen to podcasts are the kind of people who buy books. They even buy audiobooks. They'll even buy an audiobook of the podcast they just heard. It partly is a way to say thank you, partly because the medium is the message, and the experience of listening to something uninterrupted without the announcements and news and kind of trappings of a podcast, they may prefer that. And that may be worth an audible credit for them. And so don't think, oh, if I test my ideas, people won't want to pay for them. It's like, no, if you don't test your ideas may not be worth paying for. Like, you shift your thinking all the way around on that.
Yeah. And my publisher's really gotten behind this idea now, because what has happened post launch, like now that we've already launched the book, is that the podcast has become a continual promotional strategy. Like, we're not constantly saying, buy the book, but I am saying, hey, right now we are praying to overcome spiritual strongholds, and it's based on this collection. That's these pages from this book. Because for one, I want, you know, copyright and everything to say it already appeared in print. But for another, it's an easy way to say, this is provided in writing if you want it. So it doesn't even have to be salesy. It's just giving them a different way to interact with the content they already like. And I've also found, Thomas, that in some ways, it's two different audiences. Like, it started as the same audience that the podcast community championed the book and bought the book and shared the book as well as the podcast. But now, a year post-launch, I'm finding that there are people who find the book and need to be educated that there's a podcast. So there's crossover that way. And I'm able to reach readers who may not be necessarily a podcast audience and convert them to listening to the podcast, to give them a different way to interact with the content. So it kind of doubles your marketing efforts in that way as well.
And it's a great asset, because that podcast keeps growing. So with a book, you write it, it happens, and then it's like a part of the historical record. Whereas the podcast is, in a sense, a living thing. Now, you only committed to a season initially, and I really like that. So podcasts have this concept of seasons, just like TV seasons. If you're thinking about starting a podcast, you don't have to commit to doing a podcast every week or every day in order to be a quote real podcast, unquote. Some of the most popular podcasts in the world will be weekly for 5 weeks, and then they'll take months and months break, right? They have a season where it's active and then a big long break while they're preparing for the next season. And that's a perfectly appropriate way to do it. And some podcasts just happen for a season. The podcaster creates 12 episodes. They stand on their own, and then they just leave that podcast up for people to continue to go back and listen. You've probably noticed this. Your old episodes continue to get downloaded, right? It's not like a live show in that way where you're live and then everyone stops watching. It's like, no, some of my old episodes sometimes outrank my new episodes.
Yeah. And also offering them that back catalog increases engagement with your listeners. So for us, our prayer episodes are 10 minutes long. And my desire from the start with this podcast was to encourage people into a daily prayer habit. Well, in the beginning with just 12 episodes, I mean, you can listen to the same episode again and again, but that gets old fast. Now, 3 years out, there are dozens of episodes. So if someone stumbles on the podcast for the first time and they love this week's current release, well, now you can go back and you can listen every day. You can form that habit because of continually putting content out there. And what resonates with a certain audience group might not necessarily be the same that resonates with someone else. So we did a season of praying through tricky relationships. And there were people who were like, yeah, that's me. I'm there. I need this group of prayers. Another season was praying through hard emotions. And people were saying, yeah, I'm really struggling with that. The concept of seasons, I think, relieves the pressure of needing to figure it out the first time the perfect way, and also gives some freedom in tweaking as you go. One of the things we did our second year of the podcast is we introduced interviews. So for the whole first year, we only had 10-minute prayers once a week. And then the second season, for the second year, for those two seasons that I mentioned, I wanted to have someone come on and discuss those hard emotions or those tricky relationships a little bit more. And personally, I just wanted to talk to experts whose books I'd read and say, hey, would you come on my podcast? So for a year, we had expert interviews. The week that the prayer would release on Monday, that conversation would release on Wednesday. I had a blast. My community wasn't really into it, though. Which surprised me. But as I was getting their feedback on it, they're like, yeah, we're here for the prayers. I mean, they would listen sometimes to the interview if it was a topic that they were interested in. But the Prayers of Rest podcast, they just wanted the prayers. So after a year of really trying to make these interviews work, we listened to their feedback. And we said, okay, we're going to drop the interviews. We're going to go back to prayers. And it hasn't hurt our numbers. If anything, people are saying, you're listening to us. You're giving us what we need and what we want. That sort of being receptive to change and tweak and adapt is something that we can do to better serve our audiences.
And this is why listening to your listeners is so important, right? Because if you looked at other podcasts, you're like, well, this guy, he has a podcast and all he does is interviews, right? This lady, she does interviews all the time and people love her interviews. So therefore, my listeners must love interviews from me. And it's like, no, actually, they don't. Or, although I suspect if you had started a second podcast with the interviews on it, you would have eventually developed two audiences and some people would listen to both. Kind of like what I do with the Christian Publishing Show. So I have Novel Marketing, which is every week. And then I have Christian Publishing Show, which is once a month, that allows me to get into more Christian topics and more craft topics. And some people listen to both, but a lot of people just listen to one or listen to the other. And even though I mentioned both fairly regularly, I'm often surprised when I'll come across somebody like, wait, you have two podcasts? Like, actually, I have three. There's a third secret one on my thomasumstead.com if you really go digging. But people often don't know that. And you do find that you have different audiences for different kinds of show formats. And that format that you have of daily devotional format, the short part of your devotional life, is a really popular format right now. There's a lot of demand for that because people are busy, but they're wanting to still get in the Word. They're still wanting to pray and being able to do that in their car, right? Turn your car into a prayer closet, right? That's a really valuable thing. Or turn your car into a Bible study, right? It doesn't have to just be a concert all the time. And as people do that, they want it more. And so you're able to meet people in a place where maybe they'd be cussing at the driver next to them, but now they're listening to the Bible instead.
Yeah. And having the limit that we imposed on ourselves of 10 minutes, and sometimes we stretch it to 12, but just having a limit of saying, this is all we're going to do and no more, has been probably one of the most challenging parts, because part of what makes our prayer podcast different is we build in time of quiet for the listener to pray. So I will pray scripture, modeling through that REST acronym, but then quiet time for them to pray. And my editor tells me all the time, I don't know what to cut out of your prayers, because my prayers when I record them are like 15 minutes long. I'm like, I don't know what to cut. But it also forces us to be intentional and creative and keep the listener in mind, instead of saying, well, no, I think my prayer is great at 15 minutes and that's what we're going to air. So we really want that commitment to our listener, that we're observant of your time. We know you're busy. And so we're going to make sure that you have some quiet time to pray in there. Part of, I think, what makes us creative is needing to figure out challenges. Like, okay, then how do we serve in this short time space? Maybe it's your putting out a podcast every day, like I was in the early days of the pandemic, doing that live Instagram prayer call. Well, how are we going to make it work to do it every day? What do we need to adapt? What do we need to change? How can we listen to our audience and what they need? And sometimes the best ideas come out of those limitations.
It's the challenge that gives you the constraints. I mean, remember when you were in third grade and your teacher gave you a blank piece of paper and told you to write a 200-word essay, right? It was an impossible project because there was no bounds, right? What do I write it about, right? And you start crying, like, I don't know what to say. But if she said, you know, write an essay about your trip to Disney World, suddenly you wouldn't shut up about it and you're filling pages and pages. You'd think, oh, a blank page, we could write about anything. That should be easier. But in reality, constraining it to just writing about what you did during your summer break, which is of all the topics in the world, that is some tiny fraction. And yet that narrowing, that constraint does make it easier. And I think it's a hard one to put on yourself, the time constraint, because you make excuses for yourself. And you're like, well, Joe Rogan, he's the most popular podcaster in the world and his shows go 3 hours. So my show can go 3 hours too. And it's like, listen to your audience. His audience wants a 3-hour show. Your audience probably does not. And he has learned how to be interesting for 3 hours with decades of practice on television and on podcasting. He's gotten better at podcasting in that time. Don't expect to be that good in your first 2 or 3 years of podcasting.
Oh, please don't record a 3-hour podcast and then be disappointed that no one but your mom is listening. And also, again, it comes back to, what does your audience want? And so we did hear from some listeners saying, I miss the half-hour Instagram prayer calls. Like, I want us to go back to that. So we made that a feature of our Patreon account. We said, okay, once a month, we're going to have those longer prayer calls and you can join us if you support the podcast. So there's a way to listen and to adapt and to do what best serves your audience. And also, I just want to say, like, also be mindful of your own limitations. I'm in the season of pruning and cutting back and doing less. So really looking at, where are my efforts bearing the most fruit? Where am I seeing God at work? And let me double down on that and prune out, cut out some of the fluff. And so part of that was the interviews last year, right? It was a lot of fun for me to do interviews, but it also took a lot of coordination. It took more than double the time for production, for editing, for my team, for me to schedule everything in my calendar. And so even though it was a lot of fun for me, it had to come down to, A, does my audience actually want this? And B, is this healthy for me? Is this serving my family in this season? Is this the best use of my time? And I've just found God to be so faithful in providing fruit, providing harvest when we're listening to walk in the way that he tells us to go, instead of just saying, oh, but this is a lot of fun. I really want to do this thing. Going back to the opening story, had I started a podcast in 2016, when I first wanted to start, there weren't as many podcasters. There wasn't as much competition as there is now. And so from a, you know, secular perspective, you might say, oh, Ashrita, you missed the boat. You should have started then. But as believers in Jesus and followers of Jesus, we have the unique gift of the Holy Spirit to listen to him and to walk with him. So that applies to when you launch your podcast, and it also applies as you continue to make tweaks of saying, okay, what is the best use of time in this season? And then submitting to God and watching him produce growth and a harvest in that way.
Because there's two ways you can look at pruning. You can look at pruning as saying no to the unfruitful branches or the low fruit branches. But you can also look at it as saying yes to the fruitful branches, because the amount of energy and life and nutrients in the soil isn't changing, right? The amount of good sap that the tree can direct to the branches isn't changing. And so when you cut the unfruitful branches, it means more nutrients for the fruitful branches, which brings out more fruit, right? And the same is true for time, right? As you cut the less fruitful activities in terms of time and money, that gives you more time and money for the things that really matter. And maybe that's a season of spending more time with your family. And that's okay, right? You're right? We're both going through a season like that, right? I used to be this big political person. I used to be on the front page of newspapers and dealing with big political things and drama and interacting with big, important, powerful people. And I don't do any of that anymore. That whole side of my life, the whole political arm, I said no to in order to make room for my family. And maybe someday that'll come back. But right now, I've said no to it. And that's okay. And what we're talking about seasons, you say no to something for a season. It's not the same as saying no to something forever. Sometimes it is, right? That season may never come back, but sometimes that season will come back. But what won't come back is having small children, right? Every year they insist on getting a year older and there's nothing you can do about it.
It's one of the most challenging things in my life has been parenthood and constantly asking God for wisdom to know, okay, where do I lean in and where do I step back? I think when we walk in step with the Spirit, he will lead us in the way we need to go. And it might not be the sort of public acclaim that I might have on a stage when I speak to several hundred women at a conference, but spending my days at home with my children, pouring into them, pouring into the next generation. I can't remember who said it, but there's someone who said that the most important thing you might do for the kingdom of God is invest in that child who's in your home, because that child might grow up to then do world evangelism or do something that impacts millions of people and you might not know. And I'm also personally convinced that a season for more public ministry will come, maybe when my kids grow older. And in the meantime, I'm here in my home office in Northeast Ohio, recording podcasts on prayer that God is using around the world. I mean, what a great time to be alive. What an incredible time to be doing the creative work of God's kingdom, where we don't have to go overseas to necessarily have an impact internationally. We can just offer God the little that we have, and he can use it, multiply it, reach the nations around the world.
And it may be that your children, all they do is just invest in the next generation and so on, right? They don't have to be missionaries to the nations either, right? There's something about that quiet faithfulness that's incredibly powerful. You go to a place like Egypt that's been Muslim for 1,500 years, and you will find Christians who have been in Egypt for 1,500 years, or their ancestors have been in Egypt for 1,500 years or 2,000 years. They're called Coptic Christians. And the reason they're there, the reason that they're still Christian, is because the parents invested in their children generation after generation, century after century, telling them about Jesus. And the candle will not be extinguished. They're still there. That's a lot of persecution, right? That's a lot of extra taxes they had to pay, and they're still doing it. And they did it by being faithful in the little things, right? I could name you a single famous Coptic Christian. They're so old. They're like older than Protestantism, almost as old as Catholicism, depending on where you date the beginnings of Catholicism, right? They go way, way back to like the Patriarch of Alexandria, right? It's an old sect of Christianity, and yet they're still there as faithfully serving Christ and passing him down to the next generation. And there's something really powerful in that, and not something that should be dismissed. But what's really cool is that now you can do that. You can be at home with your children, investing in the next generation, and have a microphone or a keyboard and talk to the nations. Like, it doesn't have to be an either or, and it's a lot easier to magnify your voice now than it used to be.
I agree. And I didn't mean to imply that the only work that matters is the one that is publicly visible. So I'm glad you jumped on that, Thomas, and kind of clarified that. And also, I think we need to be careful of busy work for the sake of being busy. So our work can be a mile wide and an inch deep and not really make a difference for eternity. We can just churn out content for the sake of being busy. And I don't think that's what God is calling us to. So whatever that looks like, whatever that pruning is, I think it's going to be first relationally, whether it's children or it's your local church or it's your next door neighbor. God is calling us to pour into those people. But also when it comes to the work that you're doing at a keyboard, at a microphone, on your phone, think about, where can I go deeper here? Instead of just doing more and adding more, where can I meet a specific need that I've heard someone in my sphere of influence say, hey, I need this. Start with that one person. Serve that one person. And in God's timing, he will bring more if that's the call. And if not, then go deep with that one person. And there is great reward in that as well.
That's right. Obedience is its own reward when you're obeying a good king. Obedience becomes toxic if you're obeying a bad king or a bad philosophy. But yeah, that's so good. And I think it's easy as Americans. We really value work. It's one of the greatest things about America. And it's why we're the richest country in the world. But every good thing has a shadow. And it's easy to make a good thing a god. The fourth commandment says 6 days you shall work, right? We're commanded to work, and work is a good thing. But it also says rest, right? So it's like bowling. You have too much work is the one gutter, but too much rest is the other gutter, right? If you're never working, you shouldn't eat, right? If you don't work, you don't eat. But if you never rest, then what is the punishment for that? You wrote a book on rest. Help me out here.
Well, my husband and I were just talking about this. This past weekend, we were in Amish country with our small group from church, and we drove home on Sunday, and there was no one on the road. All the stores were closed. Everyone was gathered with their community, whether Amish or Mennonite. And even the horses that pulled the buggies were having a rest. The sheep were having a rest. And so it brought up this topic of God cares. He cares about us, which is why he commands rest, more as an invitation than a dictation. Even Jesus says, come to me, all you are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. But God cares also about the animals and the land. Through the prophets, God is telling his people, because you didn't let the land rest, every 7 years it was supposed to rest, and then every 50 years was supposed to be a jubilee. Because you worked and worked and worked and didn't trust me to provide enough to rest, well, now you're going in captivity and the land will rest. So it's interesting how, I don't know how we got on this topic. It's such an interesting idea that, yes, I think we relentlessly hustle and wear busyness as a badge of honor when God invites us into seasons of rest, into seasons of pruning, into seasons of slowing down. And instead of being embarrassed by that or thinking that somehow that's going to hurt us or hurt our ministry or hurt our careers, I've found in my own life that those seasons of slowing down and resting, God does some of the best work in my heart so that I can then be prepared to go out and continue to give. So this past year has been one of slowing down and resting, of seeing just how much my own like physical body has taken a toll from launching 2 books in 2 years and 7 books in 6 years. And so slowing down and saying, what does my body need? It might need more sleep. It might need better nutrients. It might need more play. It definitely needs Sabbath. But even as I'm looking at this next year, I'm going to start writing my next manuscript, thinking about, it'd be so fun to do another podcast with this manuscript. It'd be so fun maybe to do a YouTube video series with this manuscript. Like, there's so many ideas, taking them all before the Lord and saying, okay, God, where do you want to move? And never commit to so much work that I'm too busy to rest, that I'm too busy to go out with my daughter and throw a frisbee, that I'm too busy to cuddle with my kids on the couch. Busyness is not a badge of holiness. Those of us who know to slow down and to rest, that's, I think, where we truly demonstrate that we trust. We trust God to be who he says he is and to do what he said he would do.
Amen. Man, we had a church service breakout in this episode about podcasting, but this is good. And I think it's an important reminder because it's really easy to get distracted by the technology and the shiny new buttons and the shiny new microphones. It's like, hey, you got the best microphone from 2020, but now there's a new magical microphone. It'll make you sound a little bit better. And I'll admit, as a gear person, I love testing the gear and the microphones. I get distracted with technology. And there's a place for that for sure. Like for with podcasting, actually, a question I had for you is if you played around with dynamic content insertion with your podcast to promote your book, because I know you're hosting a Buzzsprout that makes this really easy. And it's a great way of leveraging all those old episodes to promote your new thing. So walk us through your strategy of using your old episodes to promote your new book.
We'll go through our content calendar and look at where are we in the calendar year. And what products do we have or what season do we have coming up? What do we need to promote in this season? We've personally made the choice to not run advertising on the podcast because we are supported by our Patreon community. And so to honor their support of the podcast, we're not running ads, but we do insert dynamic content based on whatever product we feel might best serve our audience with each season. So always the book is one of the calls to action at the end of each episode. I rotate through 6 different calls to action. So I'm not always asking them to leave a review. I'm not always asking them to share it with a friend. I circle through those. And one of them is a direct call to buy a signed copy of Prayers of Rest from our website. But on the front end, the dynamic ad that we use to insert will either promote an upcoming season if we're transitioning between seasons or tell them about, we create scripture cards to go with the different seasons to encourage people to memorize scripture as they're praying. And sometimes it might be like, hey, we're coming up on Advent and I have an Advent book that has nothing to do with the current season. But if you like the content I create, you're probably going to like this Advent devotional. And so it gives us an opportunity to communicate an announcement or an invitation to our audience across the board, regardless of whether they're listening to the new episode that just came out or they're listening to our back catalog. It's something that we've been testing out for the past year and we're so pleased with how it works. So practically, I just add the recording of those dynamic ads to my recording schedule. And I tend to batch record the seasons. So I'll sit down for 2 days and record 12 different prayers. And I'll add those dynamic ads that I know I'm going to need in a few months. And so we tend to record a few months ahead of time just to give our editing and producing crew time to get everything scheduled. But it's at the point now, Thomas, you and I were talking a little bit about how do you make this sustainable. It's at the point where I'm recording the prayers and then it's out of my hands and the rest of the team carries it and produces it. So that's the way that we've been able to continue producing a weekly podcast while also keeping up with a pretty rigorous publishing schedule as well.
Yeah, I've played around with dynamic content insertion and I really like it because let's say you're recording an episode and you know it's going live in the beginning of December. And so you're like, all right, let me tell you about my new Advent devotional or what have you. Problem is, some people are going to listen to that episode in May or July of the next year. And now they're getting an ad or you featuring something that, while it was appropriate when you recorded it, it's not appropriate for the time that that person is listening to it. And with dynamic content, you can insert the Advent ad, not just on your December episode, but all the past episodes. And then in January, you have a start the new year right. Let's start reading the Bible again promo, right? You can swap it out. And Buzzsprout makes it really easy to do this. I've tried some of the other platforms and Buzzsprout is the easiest interface for this. I know you have people that handle it, but if you had to handle it, I think you'd be surprised that it's just a few clicks to upload and add it to the episodes and swap it out. And even swapping back and forth is very, very intuitive.
Yeah, I've done it all myself. So everything that my team does, I've done it on my own at first. And I like knowing what goes into something like that. So my producer took a couple weeks of vacation and we had to switch over dynamic ads. I knew exactly where to go and what to do. And you're right. It's so easy. A few clicks and we're done.
You kids these days, you got it so easy. Back when I was a kid, editing an MP3 took work, real work.
You had to cut tape and glue it back together.
Yeah. I learned a lot about creating MP3s with that audiobook publishing business, I will say. So, Ashrita, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've been talking about the Prose Arrest podcast. So if that's something that you feel like might be interesting to you, that's prosearrest.com. You can listen to that on any podcast platform. For me personally, I do a lot more than just podcasting, writing and speaking and YouTubing. That would be ashrita.com. And you can find the correct spelling of that, I'm sure, in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll have links to both of those in the show notes. I do encourage you to check that out and just listen to how a podcast can inform a book, right? Because there's different ways to do it. You can podcast the book first, chapter by chapter. That strategy totally works. You can podcast elements of the book, or you can just use the podcast as a way of having a conversation with your readers to get a better feel for their pains and needs and then let that inform your book. But however you choose to do it, I really encourage you to give podcasting a shot. If you're wanting to learn how to start a podcast, I actually have a course on it now. It's called the Author Podcast Academy. It's a standalone course that you can get at authormedia.com, but it's also included in Obscure No More. So if you are an Obscure No More student, you already have access at no additional cost. And it's training by me on how to start your show, how to launch your show, how to make your episodes better, and how to get a lot more listeners, how to grow your audience. So if you're curious about that, you can find it at obscurenomore.com. Ashrita, do you have any final tips or encouragement?
I think the one thing I would say is test your assumptions and start small. And so if that means go live on Instagram and see what your audience says, or it means talking to your next door neighbor who you know is your ideal audience, start small, test it out before you commit to a whole lot. And you will be so happy once you're in the thick of a project and you're filled with that self-doubt. You'll be so happy to have those assumptions tested and confirmed so that you have that person in mind. When you're writing, when you're publishing, when you're recording, you can see their face and you can talk directly to them.
That's right. Well, the term minimum viable product may be a new fandangled term. The principle of being faithful with the little things before going on to bigger things is a very ancient principle that Jesus gave us a long time ago. So if you listen to that advice and you follow it and you're faithful with the little things and you're obedient, you, I think, will be pleasantly surprised with what happens. Our featured patron today is Kelly Jo Wilson, author of Tearing the Veil. Do you face rejection, hopelessness, and feeling disconnected from God? There's good news. Learn how Jesus made sure you never have to be separated from God and how much your life is truly worth. Kelly Jo Wilson, thank you so much for being a patron of the Novel Marketing Podcast. Thank you for your support that helps keep this show on the air. I couldn't do this without you. Now, the Christian Publishing Show is a production of authormedia.com. This episode's audio was edited by William Umstadt. Our producer is Lori Christine. Our guest was Ashrita Chuchu. And the blog post was created by Shauna Lettler. You can find that blog post version at christianpublishingshow.com/145. Thank you for listening and live long and prosper.